Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 730, Interview with Russ Baker. This program is being recorded on December 3rd of the year 2010. Once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Russ Baker, the author of the consummately important book Family of Secrets, which removes the cover from much of the Bush family's operations of really the better part of a century. Russ, welcome back to our airwaves.
Thank you very much, Dave. Good to be here.
Well, back in June, May and June, we recorded 6 one-hour interviews about Family of Secrets, and I think we did a good job of synopsizing. It might seem like a silly word to use for 6 hours of broadcasting, but given the formidable, deep amount of information in Family of Secrets, I think that's really all we did was to give a good overview of the book. There's an awful lot there to discuss. In the time since then, I'd be interested to get... To get your reaction about the book itself as a phenomenon. Any thoughts in that regard? One of the things that struck me and one of the reasons that particular question comes to mind is the fact that, for example, you talk about the Kennedy assassination and tie the elder George Bush and a number of other political figures, mainstream political figures, into that event. Students of the event know that, but your book discusses that, and yet it has gotten acceptance in circles that normally look askance at any discussion of topics that are deemed to be conspiracy theory. And it's one of the things I find remarkable about the book itself. Any thoughts about the book and it as a political event in and of itself?
Well, none of it has been easy. It wasn't easy to get a publisher to commit to it. Several of them, of the bigger houses, expressed excitement about the material, but some small sense, at least, of terror of actually publishing it. So we were lucky to get a good publisher, and then we did experience a kind of a blackout when it first came out. We were told that I would be on all kinds of major network programs, television, radio, and excerpts in major magazines and so on. And then one after another, those windows closed. But you're right. We have managed a certain amount of mainstream acceptance, and I think that's probably due to a combination of reasons. One is that I've been laboring as a professional journalist for quite a few years, and have developed, some reputation as well as relationships with people in the business who are perhaps more mainstream than I am. I've also been published over the years in many name brand publications and electronic media. And so I think that was a factor. Also, just I try to be very, very careful in the way that I do my work. And so most everything in Family of Secrets is footnoted. I tried always to include to name the sources and so forth. And so I think that helped. And then I think some of the endorsements are more kind of generalized endorsements of the body of work and larger than just the book, but my work over the years. And this maybe gives some people who've endorsed Family of Secrets or my work a bit of cover, you might say. In other words, this allows them to generally support this work, even though they themselves don't go this far in their own programs, their own articles, and so forth. And then we did have a few nice reviews from print publications. And then, as I say, more and more as this keeps happening, people become increasingly comfortable. And, you know, we put out this recently, this terrific video. You can watch it on our website, familyofsecrets.com, or if you go on YouTube, we've set up a YouTube channel. You type in www.youtube.com/familyofsecrets, all together with no spaces, Family of Secrets. And then this, you go to that page and automatically it opens with this video, which has all these blurbs from people like Sidney Shanberg, who won the Pulitzer Prize for his work on the killing fields of Cambodia, David Margalek, who was the New York Times legal affairs correspondent, and then later with Vanity Fair and now Newsweek, and people like that. And so I think as people see those names and those affiliations, it gives them a sense that, this stuff It may be solid, and it's interesting, as you say, that we're sort of crossing that line that may not be crossed. That's one of my main missions, by the way, Dave, with my work in Family of Secrets, but also with our nonprofit investigative website, whowhatwhy.com, whowhatwhy.com, where we're trying to do work with the same standards of agnosticism and open-mindedness and balance that the mainstream media at least claims to attempt. And so I think we stand apart from a lot of the things, a lot of the efforts that go into these areas that you see, particularly on the internet, where people don't even make any, there's not even any pretense of trying to really get to the bottom of things, but rather there seem to be agendas in play.
One of the things that was really striking to me about Family of Secrets, and that is in developing this same theme, in addition to approaching a number of topics, especially the assassination of President Kennedy, which are normally viewed as off-limits and the people who dare to cross into that territory are simply viewed as untouchables, in effect, as creatures who were simply unacceptable, and I use the term creatures advisedly, and yet you did cross into that territory. Another thing that I think was significant about the book, and that is that you broach the issue of, well, throughout Family of Secrets, the Bush family, both generations, more than two, but the Bush family are seen as deeply involved with the intelligence community, and just about everything they do is inextricably linked with intelligence operations. You also have taken that and explored its logical conclusion and something that's become an ongoing reality, and that is the use of covert operation, the use of intelligence methodology to control political process here in the United States. Any thoughts on that as we look back on the recent midterm elections?
Yes, I mean, I think it has gradually dawned on me in the two decades plus that I've done journalism, the extent to which so much of the system that we take for granted was actually rigged right from the beginning against the majority. And, you know, back in the early 90s when I did investigative cover stories for the Village Voice, I was already starting to find that as I looked at things like disaster relief nonprofits that turned out to be something else, run by George H.W. Bush's college roommate. And then it turned out that it seemed to have some connections to Iran-Contra and maybe weapons running, all sorts of other things. And so I said, you know, so all of these institutions that we take for granted that we're told, you know, this, you can give your money here if you want to help out in the case of the earthquake in this country and the flood in that one and so forth. And so that already back then I was seeing that, but my eyes were really opened in the 5 years I spent researching Family of Secrets to a whole other degree of this, and that was, as you say, the domestic side. And as I began tracing all of these individuals, many of whom, some of whom you've heard of, many of whom you haven't. And I, you know, that's one of the reasons I think Family of Secrets is both a challenging and a sort of invigorating read, is because of all of these characters that are brought in that are new. And I had to do that because you actually can see these operations taking place. You can see the control of these institutions coming into play. And so, for example, the relationship between Prescott Bush and a man named Robert Lovett, his business partner, and then Robert Lovett being probably the principal person responsible for the creation of the Central Intelligence Agency, and then going back and looking at the banking firm that they were partners in and seeing how this firm, working with the law firms of Alan Dulles and his brother and other outfits, were able to influence many American administrations back to the beginning of the 20th century to intervene in foreign countries on behalf of these private holdings. And so I began to see that these very institutions that we just take for granted, CIA, NSA, FBI, Department of Homeland Security, that we don't actually think about, well, what are these things? Where did they come from? Whose idea was it? And so on. And that, I think, just really sort of takes you, as you say, over a line, and you're in whole new territory.
One of the points that I made in the particularly the first couple of interviews that we did, and it's one of the areas that I think you're one of the many strengths of the book, and that is that it illustrates one of the realities. I believe the dominant reality of certainly American power structure. One could perhaps argue that's true and has always been true around the world. But whenever the subject of something like the assassination of President Kennedy comes up, X number of people are automatically going to roll their eyes and go, "Oh, I don't believe in conspiracy theories," and that type of subject matter is dismissed very quickly and effectively as conspiracy theory. It means that it's silly. We don't have to look at it. And yet, what your book does is to illustrate networking, and that really what is demeaned as conspiracy theory and what is dismissed as an insignificant trifle really is an outgrowth of what could be, I think, said to be the main manifestation of power and economic largesse in any society, particularly this one. And that's how they work. And it's one of the real strengths, I think, of the book is the way you start with going back to Prescott, Leavitt, and the robber barons of the Gilded Age, and then following the evolution of family power and corporate power through the decades.
Right. When I began the work on Family of Secrets, I really had not intended nor expected to get into any of that. I started with very simple questions. I was sort of interested in knowing more about George W. Bush and how someone as improbable as he would rise to that level and then do the very controversial things that he did. So I didn't know where this would lead. And so it was very interesting to just keep assembling dots and then beginning to connect them and to see this sort of American oligarchy at work and to realize that, of course, why didn't I think of this before, that the same people who very openly have championed interventions all over the world against democracies and have felt that we had the right of empire, essentially, that those attitudes would not suddenly be abandoned when they returned home, and that, in fact, the stakes are much higher here, so the very same types of attitudes and approaches would be operative, except that they'd have to go to much greater lengths to make it not obvious that they were doing this. So they obviously could not do it openly in this country. And in fact, in the other countries, of course, like in Guatemala with the invasion there in the 50s, they had these elaborate covers in Chile in the 70s. And so they were always using surrogates and so forth and propaganda through second parties. And so they're never really out in the open about this. And in the United States, they certainly haven't been out in the open, but we can begin to see these things. And they do manifest themselves visibly in the persons of individuals like Karl Rove or Dick Cheney, where they essentially choose to kind of emerge from the shadows and sort of take the rap for a lot of things that are deemed disturbing, dangerous, or illegal. And in fact, it's very interesting because by them being willing to take the rap, they then take that kind of criticism from the mainstream media, the corporate-owned media. And so you'll see columnists in the New York Times ferociously going after both Rove and Cheney, but failing to understand, or maybe they understand, but they don't talk about the fact that these men are just working for others and that they are laboring on behalf of this very elaborate system of power that has probably always been with us.
One of the chapters or events that you describe in your book that really illustrates how, in a sense, the chickens came home to roost on November 22nd, 1963, that is Barbara Bush's letter that you dissect and point out how it really is something of a deliberate cover for what the Bush family were doing on November 22nd, 1963. Forgotten the name of the gentleman, but he had helped with covert operations in Greece, among other places, and he was a longstanding covert actions specialist, CIA, and he had stopped by Dallas, Texas, right about the time President Kennedy was being killed. And you place him and the elder George Bush within a milieu of covert action specialists. So, I've forgotten the guy's name offhand, but he was
Alfred Ulmer.
There we go. Yes.
Yeah, Al Ulmer. See, and it's very interesting because Larry King had George H.W. and Barbara Bush on recently, and he didn't ask them, not surprisingly, anything tough. I actually am just writing a blog post for our site, whowhatwhy.com, about I read in the New York Times yesterday or the day before an article, Dateline Moscow, about these WikiLeaks, diplomatic cables referencing Vladimir Putin in a negative light. And the New York Times article then says, to deal with these, Vladimir Putin went on to Larry King, where King is notorious for his softball questioning. And so he knew he could get on there and make his case without being challenged. And we actually went back and did some research, myself and Dave McHenry, who helps us with some of our stuff, and we're unable to find any other examples of the New York Times ever referencing Larry King's softball style with former President Bush 41 and so forth. And that's really where they ought to be focusing, that here's Family of Secrets with four chapters of new information on the Kennedy assassination, all coming out of curiosity about George H.W. Bush's statement he couldn't remember where he was on November 22, 1963. And then all of these facts, which we can go into, the CIA's overthrow expert who lives abroad in 1963, coming to visit just by chance the week of November 22 and having lunch with the Bushes and so forth. And, you know, all of these things. And
this, the aforementioned Al Ulmer.
Al Ulmer, yeah. Right. And so, you know, this, you know, of course, you would want Larry King and the New York Times to ask Bush 41, just out of curiosity, this man has this book. He's a well-known journalist, and it's all footnoted. And just curious, what's your reaction? Where were you on November 22? How did you know Al Ulmer? You were a small-time oil man. How did you know Al Ulmer, CIA coup expert extraordinaire? But nobody asks.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the thing to do, I think, if you really want to get mainstream America to at least contemplate some of the questions that you raise in Family of Secrets, you're going to have to go on Dancing with the Stars, Russ.
I'm thinking about that. I've got an inquiry into the Palin family to see if we can do some sort of a duet of sorts.
Yeah, it actually brings to mind, you know, obviously, you know, I'm kidding to an extent. Actually, I'm kidding, period. But it brings to mind one of my favorite quotes from author Edith Wharton, who noted that, quote, a frivolous society can only achieve dramatic significance through what its frivolity destroys. And that is something, you know, although obviously Sarah Palin is rightfully the subject of a great deal of mirth, the fact that she could become the serious political phenomenon she has become is not funny at all. That isn't in the least little bit amusing. It is, in a sense. When you undertook to write Family of Secrets, I take it as a given that there was an element of confusion about how does somebody like George W. Bush, who clearly was not qualified to be president of the United States and who basically played true, basically he botched his presidency, how does he become president immediately after his failed presidency and after the complete failure of free market economics, yet that same ideology is once again coming to the fore? And it should, I think, cause people to ask questions. It's past a point mystifying.
I think that we are failed in the question-asking department on almost everything. I'd love to have the time to look more into Sarah Palin and whether this is just simply, you know, another pretty face, because we know that she doesn't bring a lot of insight into the world or policy vision or anything else. She's not a tremendously good speaker or debater or what have you. And so what is that we're looking at, other than her physical looks? And you know, I don't see such a great job being done of that by the media. So I would say almost anything you want to talk about, Homeland Security, what is it? What's the real value of these gropings and full body scans and so on? You know, I just was listening to the radio up here in the Bay Area the other day, and somebody was talking about at-risk youth and how by not funding programs for them, we actually increase the danger to ourselves so vastly much more than we ever face a danger from foreign terrorists. So there's no kind of thoughtful balancing out of risks. Nobody's really looking into these things.
Bill Clinton recently observed that we're in a, quote, fact-free, unquote, political environment, which I would suggest that that's been true for a long time. And I think one of the things that Family of Secrets does is to go back and to haul a great deal of subject material into the investigative spotlight that generally has been dismissed, as I've indicated, as, you know, oh, that's silly conspiracy theory. Who cares about that? One of the things that you point out in Family of Secrets is the way that the power structure you're looking at has enabled itself through generations. In other words, the elder George Bush got a lot of impetus from people around him, from his ancestors and from the institutions that caused them to thrive. He then obviously helped George W. Bush to prosper and set the stage for his rise to power. And that generational manifestation is one of the things that obviously has brought us to the situation we're in. Talking about the lack of commentary, you mentioned that Politico.com is actually done by the son of a major George W. Bush supporter. Which guy was that?
Joe Allbritton. He had been involved with, I want to say, was it Riggs Bank? It was one of these banks in Washington that was involved with Saudi money, and there were investigations of it, and I believe some consequences. And this is the son is running it, and the son, you can't necessarily hold the children responsible for what their parents do. But it's interesting that that so many, the old media was the Washington Post, controlled by the Graham family, with their and the Meyer family before that, their ties into the military and the spy establishment and the banks and so forth, and then they are sort of unseated to some extent by Politico, and here's another guy who's another banker who's again connected in with the exact same interests. And I say that, I mean, I was delighted to actually write something recently for Politico, a fairly narrow piece that did not go into 90-some% of the revelations of Family Secrets, but nevertheless, they let me at least talk about George W. Bush and his book and say some other things. And I think there's some good people working there, but you're pointing out just this issue of ownership and control, and I think that is an important one to study.
I know when I hear, for example, during my morning commute, I'm listening to the radio and I'm listening to the traffic reports, and the CBS AM news affiliate here features regular input from Politico. And so in terms of as they're presenting what for the most part is critical observations about Barack Obama, it's just interesting that it's coming from someone who is the son of a major Bush supporter. Riggs Bank, also, I would note, was a major repository for funds used for covert operations over the decades.
Well, that's right.
Yet another institution that's inextricably linked with the intelligence milieu and the world of covert operations we've been discussing.
Yeah, and as I recall, I may be wrong on this, but as I recall, the elder Allbritton comes out of Texas. So, again, he's very much part of that circle.
And what you referred to, or what you quote somebody as referring to, the Texas Raj, figures prominently in the book, the power elite of Texas, and they are powerful, and they are something of an elite, although one could perhaps argue that that's strictly in an economic sense, and that they represent some of the dregs of society as a whole. Have you had any response to some of the investigations in the book? In other words, has anybody suggested that some of the material be used to reopen or carry on in any investigations?
I think it's too early for that. We're still in those beginning stages of trying to simply let people know that Family of Secrets exists. And that's difficult enough. You know, there are, I don't know the numbers, but there are tens or hundreds of thousands of books published in the English language each year. And then so many more that are sitting there in places like Amazon. And so to kind of break out of that and create any awareness is very, very difficult. I'm on a kind of a really extended campaign or tour to let people know about Family of Secrets, because even people who are deeply interested in the very topics we're discussing about don't even know generally that it exists. And so I found, for example, with people on Capitol Hill that they've told me we don't have time to read books, but it sounds interesting. People who work in the White House who really ought to know about these things and may not even realize what they got themselves into, that they need to read it. And so it's starting to happen that people are, you know, adopting Family of Secrets and buying half a dozen or a dozen copies and sending them to people they know in the White House, on Capitol Hill, in news organizations, or to people they don't know, which, I, by the way, I'd love to see more folks get copies and just send them to opinion makers and let them know about it. And I'm guessing that most of the people who would mount these investigations, people on the Hill, advocates in various areas, whether it's the Kennedy assassination or people who want to get to the bottom what Watergate really was, people who scrutinize the activities of the intelligence apparatus, I would still say that the vast majority of them have not read Family of Secrets or even heard of it. And so we've got really quite a steep hill to climb here. I think we are climbing it, and I'm seeing actual results month to month. Shows like yours are very, very important in that, irrespective of the size of the audience, if you've got discerning, sophisticated people listening, and if they are people who tend to take a little bit of action, go online and post thoughtful commentaries, maybe mention things on other shows and so forth, that we can begin to spread this documented mass of information showing us a whole different history, a whole different recent history of this country. And so I am hopeful that eventually this will lead to some new investigations on Capitol Hill and elsewhere, and perhaps even in the criminal courts.
We're almost out of time on this side. Very quickly, one of the things you write about, Texas author and journalist Mickey Herskowitz was doing a puff piece biography of George W. Bush prior to W.'s campaign run, presidential campaign run, and W. disclosed to him that he was contemplating invading Iraq even before he became president. It typifies the type of thing that one might expect to shake the tree a little bit and perhaps see a little bit of political fruit drop from the branches.
Well, what's extraordinary about that, Dave, is in all these instances, and by the way, that information I tried to publish in 2004 when I first interviewed Mickey, and I ran up against resistance with all these top news organizations. They were tantalized by the information, but they were terrified of the consequences of being out front of the pack reporting this information. And so this is what we're looking at. And I think that as I talk to big names in media and so forth, they're all kind of, you know, they really are afraid that they're going to get chopped off. And so they're sort of, you know, they just want to see some kind of reassurance. And this is why I'm trying to start doing more of these cable programs and what have you, so that I can create a comfort zone so that all these folks, most of whom are perfectly decent people, can feel the confidence, and the fear will recede, and they'll say, you know, I can go a little further with this material. As you point out, that Mickey Herskowitz stuff, I mean, is a well-known Texas journalist, and so there's really no question as to his overall credibility. It's just a question of whether people will run with it.
Let's explore this further in the second side of this program, because we're almost out of time in side one. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 730, Interview with Russ Baker. This program is being recorded on December 3rd of the year 2010. For Russ Baker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.